Zach.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
It's us. Yes. Yes. So we're having a little bit of difficulties with some of our music right now. So you're listening to Queer State of Mind on Radio Free Brooklyn. Hello, New York City. How y'all doing?
Hello,
hey, Brooklyn.
New York.
How are you?
Yes.
How are you?
You are listening to Ori, Sadu, and Justin. We think Taraj, she's going to be on here in a moment, you know.
She's always late.
Coming from Jersey, you know how you do it. So, we are going to have on the program a great interview with a journalist who is telling his compelling story in a book, Peeling Back the Layers. You'll meet Luane Childrey later on in the show, and you'll find out how he overcame obstacles starting at a very young age to become an award-winning broadcast reporter. And do you have trouble picking gifts? We're going to discuss gift-giving for the gays. I mean, it's not like we know really anything, but we're going to talk about what we do. It's all coming up right here on Queer State of Mind, so listen up in just a moment. You're listening live.
Live from Bushwick, Brooklyn in New York City, this is Queer State of Mind on Radio Free Brooklyn, powered by the Queer Minded Radio Network, with Ori, Sadu, Chinwe, Justin, and Taran. Join the conversation and tell us how you feel on Twitter at QSOMNYC, on Facebook at facebook.com/queerstateofmind, or send us a text or voice message to 917-472-1224 using the keyword QSOM. That's 917-472-1224, keyword QSOM. Now it's time to get into a queer state of mind with this week's Brunch Tea segment, live only on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Hello, New York City.
Hi, New York.
Hey.
We are here. We are live. You're listening to Queer State of Mind on a Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm Ori Givens, joined by Justin and Sadu here in the studio. And we finna get ready for the holidays, y'all.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm happy.
I am, too. We actually, like, decorated our tree. Like, my roommates are very... Well, one of my roommates is a super big Christmas person. She's like, we're gonna decorate a tree. She sent out an email, like, we're gonna have decorating time. And it was actually super fun. Like, I hadn't been in the Christmas spirit like that for a long time. So I'm kind of excited about it.
Oh, I know.
That's nice. It's so, like... I have a feeling y'all
you're not in a holiday spirit.
Oh, well, I mean, I guess I should say holiday spirit because I don't really celebrate Christmas. But
I do.
I mean, I do I in the sense Christmas. That we kind of
I
get together and give gifts.
I Ooh. Celebrate Christmas.
Ooh, yes, but holiday, you know, it is. Yeah, isn't it? It's Hanukkah right now, too, right?
Yes. Isn't Hanukkah over?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I don't know, maybe.
I don't know. Well, shalom.
It's all like right. eight. I don't know. I feel badly that I don't know. We should Google it. Somebody should Google it. Yeah. We'll figure that out. So if it's still Hanukkah, happy Hanukkah to everyone. If not, happy belated Hanukkah. Do you say that? I hope that wasn't insensitive. We're really, really, really bad about research here. We need to do better. So what's going on in Brunch Tea, Justin? What's happening?
Okay. So last week, after the show, we went to the radio party at Beast of Bourbon.
Oh, yes. It was fabulous. Yes. Okay. Fabulous.
Let's
shout out to
that.
Beast of Bourbon. Shout out to
Your
Brooklyn.
Moment you had that was very, excuse me, people. Mm-hmm. It was very Negro-ish.
It was one of the blackest moments I've had in the city in a while.
Tell them what you were doing, Justin. I was doing it with you, so I'm not sure what we were doing.
Okay, so, right, so we leave the barbecue establishment, and we're on the corner waiting for the bus. Whereas I got my cornbread to go.
I was about to say, you were eating cornbread,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because dude brought out a whole pan of it. I said, well, now, hold on now. It's cornbread.
Oh, there was just cornbread for free?
No, it wasn't. No, I got something to go.
Girl.
Oh. $2.
Oh, okay.
You know, like that little boy on a bike and I'm better off dead.
Right.
So, yeah. So, like, we get there and we're sitting there on the corner waiting for the bus in Brooklyn. And I'm just devouring this cornbread. Because it wasn't cakey, mm-hmm. like the Boston Market cornbread. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like Jiffy-like.
We like your cornbread Boston Market promotion. Or
yeah. Your cornbread is great.
We love your cornbread. Yeah, it wasn't like Jiffy, because I'm a big fan of Jiffy.
Yeah. By the way, we suck really badly. Hanukkah ended on the 14th.
Oh, so, too. We're horrible.
Wow.
We suck badly.
Oh, well, I got some guilt. I ate it, but
you
still.
You silly. So this cornbread was amazing.
It was amazing because you know it was real buttery. Mm-hmm. It was really dense.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't cakey. It's kind you can sop. It's kind it's meant for sopping.
Ooh, sopping.
Yeah,
yeah. But on its own, it was just surprisingly delicious.
It's that cornbread that goes good with something you make with beef.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that you can, okay, like so like some greens maybe, or, oh, stroganoff.
Yes, it was very much like that. It was very delicious.
It's not the kind you put with chili.
No.
Okay.
No, not chili cornbread. No. It's a different type.
You need it. It's like with something savory.
Yeah.
You need something savory. Well, chili, I don't know, because I like sweet cornbread with chili.
Yeah, same
here. Or really spicy.
Well, here's the thing. You know, that's the kind of cornbread that's so good that you want to keep it and let it dry out because it's going to make the bomb-ass dressing the next day.
Yeah. It is. I was about to say it will go dry in like, you know, 45 minutes.
But that leads me to the next conversation. As anyone from not New York understands this, in New York, you will get every other ethnic cuisine from all far reaches of the world. Sri Lankan, Taiwanese, just anything except for American Southern food. And I don't understand this. It is pissing me off.
Well, but what about like Amy Ruth's and places
like
that?
These are like the two.
It's limited.
It's very, very limited. But like you can get every other cuisine except for good American or barbecue.
Well, when you have it, like people want to try to put their own spin on it, right?
Yeah, and then it's just not. You also have to realize you're in New York City where everybody wants to eat something that's organic. By the way, nothing's organic. Everything has chemicals on it. I'm just hate to break it. But, I'm just saying.
Dun, 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 dun.
But that's the tea. But Justin's right. You can't really find somewhere you can go, like, for really good fried chicken. We go for fried chicken to the Korean people.
Right. They know.
They know
fried chicken.
Yes.
The first time I had it, I felt ashamed to be black. I said, oh, you know, y'all can't have this shit, too.
We thought we were doing this right.
No, we were not.
But to be fair, and I'm going to say this online so the world can know, Justin Blakey fries the best chicken I've had in my life. And trust me, I'm saying this live. It means something.
Right. That's on the record.
Now, on the shady side, I don't know if she can cook anything else.
No, them shrimp and grits, though, that we had at the brunch,
cute.
Them
it
shrimp and
cute.
Grits was on
Thank
point.
You.
But
no.
You had that chicken. That chicken, I sat there. I ate like seven legs. Over.
But here's the deal. And once again, about food in New York.
Yeah.
And I knew something was right here. Because, you know, okay, we're going to be rude here. Look, so when we get in there, we saw the people behind that were in the kitchen because the kitchen was kind of exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two burly black men and one white man that looked like he just got out of prison. So you knew they were back there about to start throwing down some ribs.
Yes.
You felt it. You felt it. Like, you know what?
You know them ribs was going to be on
Buddy,
Prince.
Bubba, and Clifton.
Kristen, yes. Right. Bjorn. Bjorn from the West Side.
Not Bjorn, stop.
But no, it was, oh, God.
I think that's my favorite time about this time of year is eating.
Oh, we should also talk about the infused.
Look,
Beast of Bourbon needs to promote us. I'm saying this,
your bourbon. Well, we're partners, definitely.
Oh,
but that,
yeah.
I didn't get to try the infused whiskey.
The infused
I feel bad.
Whiskeys.
Yeah.
Are like
that mango?
I have never
mango spicy. The spicy mango
See,
one. Oh yeah,
I'm gonna have to go get my.
It
life
brought
again.
Out the alcohol content because I'm like.
And you had the lemongrass one.
I had the lemongrass one, and it's delicious, 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 delicious.
Mm-hmm. I am.
If
kind
you're
of,
a whiskey drinker, go to Beast of Bourbon.
Yes, I do.
Yeah,
I
it
do.
Was. It was.
I know. I'm sad I didn't get. I had a normal whiskey. I didn't really try anything new. I didn't get any food.
He had his makers. He's bougie.
Yeah, I know. I love it. I don't even consider that bougie. Like,
well, in New York,
I mean,
is.
Bougie Kentucky. Like, I get the thing.
Hold on now.
No, Kentucky is where they make great bourbon.
Right.
Like, that's not shade.
We're doing it on
at
a family
all.
Reunion.
Yeah,
my friend lives in Kentucky.
No shade. No shade. So yeah, that's. I'm excited to try that. I have to go back.
Yeah.
What else is going on?
Well, this can be all about food because, you know, to piggyback on what we were saying and how we go there and we saw the people behind the counter, so we trusted it. Here's the lesson, kids. If you go to anyone's Southern restaurant, if you don't see a whole bunch of black people
or white people,
with accents, stay the fuck away.
Isn't that ironic? If you go to a Southern restaurant and you don't see a bunch of black people or a bunch, if it's all white people, you're still safe.
Yeah, as long
Maybe.
As they got accents.
Okay, because okay.
What's going on, sweetie?
Yeah.
Because how y'all doing?
Because it was a good bookend because we went to Dinosaur Barbecue in Brooklyn and, you know, it just, no, exactly.
So, good girl, next topic, she's going to talk.
No, I mean, there's a lot of barbecues that try to do different styles, and I don't want to shade any of, but I feel like there's something dramatically
missing.
Missing. from
flavor,
the experience.
Season.
Well, and for Lowry's, me, it's not necessarily char. The meats. It's actually the sides. Like the meat, I've gotten brisket and stuff like that. Yeah.
Seasoning. Exactly. Well, actually,
nobody put their foot in them no. sides.
You know,
nobody did.
They have learned how to make macaroni and cheese here in the city. I will give them good. That.
Oh, yes. There's some place that delivers to me. I can't remember the name, but that macaroni and cheese on point.
What did we have? I had a macaroni and cheese the other day that was just, I can't remember where I went to. No. It was the same place. I was looking at the macaroni and cheese.
Oh, yeah. Like, ooh. Like, wait a minute now. Hold on now.
Yeah. I don't know how to make macaroni and cheese. But, I know that's random. I'm sorry.
You know,
I had to speak my piece.
And this is our weekly Patty Bill reference.
You are African, though. That's not really like, you didn't grow up making macaroni and cheese.
The thing about it is I actually could learn because I can cook.
You can cook. She can cook. Yeah. Don't get me wrong.
But
like, she can cook.
You know, I've eaten such good macaroni and there's certain things I won't do.
Uh-huh.
I won't fry the chicken Justin does. He does the specific Asian chicken. I won't make macaroni and cheese because I've had it done at its best.
I understand what you're saying.
I want to
completely.
Be able to go over to someone's house and
experience
their,
yes, absolutely.
I mean, I can honestly learn how to make it, but like, no, then it won't be special.
No, there are definitely some things that I don't make. Like my dad, I could learn how to make greens, but my dad makes amazing greens that take like hours and hours and hours and hours.
Yes.
And, you know, he just be stirring them, just stirring them like million times. And like,
I got some good greens for you too. And potato salad.
Ooh. Now, my potato salad is pretty good, but I like spicy potato salad, so a lot of people don't necessarily care for it.
I don't like
that bland, like,
oh no,
just tastes like, I don't know, mayonnaise. No,
I
struggle.
My potato salad look right. It look yellow, like potato salad supposed to look.
Right.
White.
Mine actually be a little, it's like a little yellow, but also a little red because I like a lot of paprika and also and some sriracha.
You put the eggs on top too? You like put the whole, cut the eggs?
Sometimes. If I'm serving it, like if it's for my, like, you know, I'm making it for my house, I do it. But if I'm serving
it,
because my mom is definitely about
that. Tastes better the next day.
Mm-hmm. All those things that you kind of mix and like, you know, because everything mixes together.
The next day it's just like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Oh, y'all got me
thinking. I'm the only person.
Christmas food.
Speaking of spaghetti, you remember, I'm not going to call her name.
Ooh.
We had a friend. We went to another friend's house and he made dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of those people, I do not like my spaghetti. I don't like the sauce and the noodles mixed together and then served. I want them separate on the plate.
Presentation-wise,
excuse me. He doesn't like them mixed together. But he wants to be able to layer the spaghetti and then layer
like
the sauce on top.
I like putting the sauce on top of the spaghetti
and not mixing
it
together.
But when it's already
mixed,
it just bothers me.
Okay, so you want like do they bring you like a cup of sauce so you can distribute it on your spaghetti?
No, but when we made it at a specific occasion, our friend was like, "Well, that's not how you make spaghetti." Our friend is very Italian. She claims to be. I'm not gonna call her name because she is famous.
No, I've got that is a thing. Like I've heard from other people. Like
but
you don't just plop spaghetti sauce down on.
We had a big argument in the kitchen because the three of us looked at him like,
I did it. I was fine. I was like, you know what? Here, let me just go.
It was me and I pulled her clan. And I was like, no, ma'am. I'm like, you are not gonna put. No.
But,
you know, that's just me being real picky. We ate and had a good time. You know.
Yeah.
You can't gather the girls without shade being, you know, taken. You know.
I've when I make pasta, I do try to mix the seasoning because I like to have it all coated. But that is a point of contention for some people.
I like to look at the pasta and I like to look at the sauce.
I'm one of those people. If I'm going to have a weird like food thing, I don't like for breakfast. Like if I'm going to have pancakes or waffles or anything with syrup, like they have to be separate. Like I can't have my syrup
the same thing.
Mixing with my bacon.
Oh,
my
I love that.
Thing. I hate
that. No, I put syrup on my bacon.
Oh no, it's
so
gross. No, it messes with the flavor. Like the sweet and savory, I can't.
See, I love sweet and savory, so that's me.
Yeah, some people do. And
I put the bacon
like, and
on
I,
the side.
I don't mind things
that's
missing.
That's why McGriddles are so popular.
If it's all savory stuff, like
that is
Thanksgiving,
cute,
like I can do all of that. But I can't do when it's like all of the, you know.
Oh, well. Sidebar. Ori has on the most beautiful shirt, just so you guys know.
Oh, everybody likes this shirt.
It's really
cute. It's so
cute.
Broke down, but I feel like it's like old and, you know.
It's just lesbian enough.
It just
enough.
Just enough.
Just sapphic enough.
Y'all are going to cut down a small tree,
speaking,
not a forest.
Speaking of sapphic, I don't know. That's a horrible transition. We're going
right.
to cut brunch tea, and we're going to go on to listen to a little bit of music. And then we're going to hear an interview from LaWayne Childrey, who's a journalist in Mississippi, who's overcome a lot of obstacles to really become a well-respected journalist and is now telling his story in a book. So we'll be right back on Queer State of Mind in just a moment on Radio Free Brooklyn.
All right.
Welcome back to Queer State of Mind right here on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Yes.
That was Noche de Paz with Mark Anthony and Mary J. Blige. I love that song.
I am glad that Jesus granted Mary J. Blige intonation.
One wish.
No!
For Christmas holiday, honey.
Oh.
But you know what? You will stay in tune.
The shade.
This Christmas. Yes,
this
you will.
This Christmas. All right. So,
sorry, Mary. I love you, girl.
We do. We love you. We absolutely love you. In our first Creative Queer segment, we are starting something new. We are going to meet LaWayne Childry. He's an accomplished broadcast journalist from Mississippi, and he overcame childhood trauma that caused turmoil throughout his life for years to come, and he's now a leading voice in media in his area and around the country. Here's our interview with LaWayne Childry about his book, Peel. Peeling back the layers. We rarely get to see stories, we see stories about LGBTQ people, but we don't necessarily get a lot of autobiographical stories telling about our experiences in a nonfiction sort of way. So can you tell me a little bit about what we're going to experience if we read Peeling Back the Layers, what it was like to write it?
For me, this book started out as a way to help people who had gone through traumatic events. Because I look at this book as a way to deal with unaddressed childhood trauma. That's what this book is all about for me. Because for me, the trauma started at an early age. I was just 4 years old when I survived a house fire that I watched my two-year-old cousin died in. And after that, I was sexually molested by my stepfather between kindergarten and second grade. Right after that, my mom married. Well, not right after that, but shortly after that, my mom started dating a new guy who turned out to be an alcoholic. He was a jazz musician, but he was also an alcoholic. It kept him on the road a lot, and my mom would travel with him. So I ended up staying with family members. And so I had a pretty good life. It was not a bad life, but had a lot of bad negative experiences. As an adult, I started acting out. I think it was because of all of the bad things that had happened in my childhood that were never addressed, and ended up in a number of bad relationships, ended up addicted to crack cocaine, and ended up dropping out of college, ended up with HIV, just a whole lot of things. And eventually I was able to seek treatment. And when I say treatment, I mean medical treatment as well as psychological treatment, and checked myself into a hospital, and started getting better. Ended up at 40 years old going back to school to pursue my childhood dream, which was always to become a broadcast journalist. But like so many other people, you know, you get to the point where you get sidetracked. And other things seem more important than school. But at 40 years old, I went back to school. Everything that I touched in school seemed to turn to gold. Ended up with a great job in Mississippi, working for Mississippi Public Broadcasting. During the course of those 9 years, I was able to gratefully win more than a dozen Associated Press News Awards, won about 4 Edward R. Murrow Awards, regional awards, and I've won 1 Edward R. Murrow Award for journalistic excellence on the national level. So it's been an amazing ride. You know, when I was writing this book, I wanted to title it The Epic Journey of LaWayne Randall Childry, because, you know, there had been so many things that it took in place in my life. And by the time I got around to writing the book, you know, people ask me all the time, was this therapeutic for you? And I have to tell them, not really. My goal for this book was not therapy for me, but therapy for others who may be going through some similar situations. because I had already done the work. I had been through therapy. I had done all those things. And I was on the track to living a whole, rich, fulfilled life. So,
yeah, that's an interesting point. You know, as I think we asked, like, I think back to interviews, other interviews that I've had with writers who wrote about their experience. And, you know, you do ask, that's one of the questions that you ask is it therapeutic? And then you don't really think about, one, you're recounting all of these parts of your past that you may not have wanted to recount. And, you know, so there might be reasons that it's not therapeutic. That's an interesting perspective.
I don't want to discount that the, you know, writing this book was therapeutic, because on one level it was. I told you that my trauma began at 4 years old when I was in a house fire that my cousin and I, my two-year-old cousin and I was four, he was two. We set the house on fire. We were playing in a coal burning stove or a wood burning stove. And we were at home with my grandfather. He was keeping us. He went to sleep, and we wanted to see these coals, you know, these ashes. And we wanted to make our own tiki lanterns like we'd seen on TV in the Tarzan movies. And so we put little rags on sticks and tied them together and started running around the house. And one of the rags falls off of one of the sticks. It catches the rug on fire, and then it spreads to the curtains, and then it spreads to the bedroom. And we're trying to put it out with little glasses of water, and it keeps growing and growing and growing. And my two-year-old cousin wants to run into the room where the fire is really raging at this point and hide under the bed, thinking that he would be protected. And I can remember trying to pull him out. And this, we were both drenched in sweat. And he eventually slipped from my hands. And I stood there frozen in shock as he was burned to death. And my grandfather had been in the other room. He had fallen asleep. And he was trying to get to us too, but the smoke and the flames kept him away. Luckily, there was a guy who was just happened to be passing by, who was checking power meters of all things along the streets. He saw the flames billowing from the rooftop, burst through the door. He was able to save me, but not save my cousin. And I say that was the beginning of my trauma that was never addressed. My family, you know, was very supportive of me, but I never had professional therapy to deal with the issues. And even though I thought I had dealt with the issues throughout my lifetime, it wasn't until I sat down to write this book that I really realized that I had dealt with some of the issues surrounding this, but not all of them. And the one thing that I had not dealt with was, how did my aunt, the mother of the cousin who was killed, what was her reaction to all of this? We had never, ever had this discussion. But when I was writing the book, I knew that I had to ask her what were her most poignant memories of that day. And what she told me was that she found out about this incident in the back of a taxi cab. And she had been out shopping that day. Something told her to just go on home because she was going to do some more shopping, and something just within, you know, just the divine has told her to just, you know, go on home. And when she got in the taxi cab, the taxi cab told her, and I guess this taxi cab was like a Uber, you know, so it was this guy that, you know, traveled the neighborhood, you know, taking people back and forth. And he knew her, and he said, well, you know, a couple of houses burned down up on Byers Hill today, which was the community they lived in. And she said, no, I hadn't heard that. And then he said, yeah, they say they had to pull your nephew out. And she was like, what? And then he went on to say, but they couldn't get your baby, though. And my aunt said, you know, in that moment, she was like, you know, in the back of this taxi cab, you know, shivering and shaking and crying. And the guy continued, you know, like he was reading from the newspaper. that her dad had to jump out of the second story window. And so just hearing that story opened up wounds that I had never, ever really dealt with, because I had never really known what happened. I knew we set the house on fire. I knew all about that. I had dealt with that. But I had never dealt with her feelings. And at that moment, you know, I was hurting not only for myself and for my cousin, but also for my aunt. And so when it comes to therapy, I think that was the one thing that I got out of writing this book for myself. What I have discovered is that even though I'm telling this story, which is my personal story, it's become a symbol of courage for so many other people. And I get every day, you know, I get somebody hitting me up on Facebook, or, you know, if I'm making a presentation somewhere talking about this story, they come up and say, thank you for telling my story, my son's story, my daughter's story. Thank you for giving our family hope. Especially when it comes to the part dealing with HIV and AIDS, especially when it comes to the part about being 40 years old, going back to school. You know, there are just so many moments in this book that people seem to relate to, and their issues may not have anything to do with mine. I had a coworker at public radio who told me, Luane, I didn't know that you had been through so much. But what really impressed me was that you were 40 years old when you went back to college. She said, I'm 38 and I want to go back to graduate school so badly, but it terrifies me. And so those are the types of stories that I get. Those are the reactions that I'm getting from this story. And so, you know, like I said, it may not necessarily have been therapeutic to me, but when I wrote it, I was hoping that it would be therapeutic for someone else, and that's proving to be true.
And you've been listening to an interview, an excerpt of an interview with author and journalist Luane Childrey right here on Queer State of Mind. His story talked about really the beginning of his journey with the death of his cousin and the subsequent things that happened in his life with the HIV infection and drug abuse and things like that. Have you guys, I'm curious to know I've seen it in my own life when traumas kind of come back to haunt you from your past. Like, we don't have a lot of time, but I'm just kind of curious, like, how have you dealt with that, kind of dealing with things that come from your past?
Why did you bring this to me? I was trying to get you to speak first.
That's all you, Bob.
It's difficult.
Yeah.
As many people don't know, except the people who are close to me, is I'm a kid from a war-torn country. I was in the Liberian War. I was kind of a small soldier.
Everyone who meets you knows that because you tell them. It's like veganism. You just tell them.
I don't tell everyone that.
No, I don't feel like she didn't tell it like right away. Like, you know she's from Liberia. And
yeah,
you
I say
know
I'm from Liberia. I don't say I'm from the war.
It used to be.
No.
It used to be. Oh, God. That was a good car you had, though.
It is a great car. That is not a good car. That's a great car. Have you been in the war?
Anyway, how has that war experience, the migration experience coming to the U.S., how has that shaped you today? How do you deal with those traumas today?
You know what? I'm not really still in trauma. I just don't take things for granted.
Okay.
Like Justin can tell you, I look at him crazy when he has his first world problems issues.
Oh, I do have a lot of first world problems. I do.
So it doesn't mean anything to me sometimes. Uh-huh. I have first world problem issues because I live in the first world now. But I have to always how it's affected me is that, excuse me, I snap myself back because I'm like, oh, well, you know, if this happens, that's not a big deal. But to someone in America, you know, if, like, you know, the lights are not on for, like, a day, it's, like, traumatic. For example, I was staying with a trifling friend. We're not going to call no names. Mm-hmm. And the lights went off. Why are you ringing that bell, honey?
It's the shade bell.
The shade is coming.
Anita Ward is not here. Do not ring that bell.
I'm not trying to ring the bell.
Anita Ward, ring the bell.
There's a forecast of shade.
So anyway, and the lights went out, and this person just kind of lost it.
Oh.
And girl, I lit a candle and turned on my phone, and I was fine.
Like, we get really accustomed to our accoutrement.
The hot water goes out. Honey, I boil a pot, of hot water and I put in the bathtub. Mm-mm. The toilet's not running. I fill a bucket with water and use the bathroom. I just know how to survive stuff. So I don't really have trauma. I have survival skills.
Okay. Well, I think that's a good place. But to
be fair, actually, let me rephrase that. I lie. I cannot watch movies about war.
Yeah, that trigger.
I can't.
I could see that.
Never have.
I can't really watch ones about torture. And it's not that I've really experienced torture. It's just something like I had a lot of dreams when I was a kid. So it brings back that kind of those dreams. But yeah, it's really, really weird.
Yeah, so that's...
I don't know. I think that for a lot of us that kind of have had trauma in our previous lives, in our childhood, and I think everybody has experienced something, some sort of trauma, whether it's loss or, you know, abuse or anything that you could have experienced. It takes a lot of time to, you know, to use the title of the book, peel back those layers and really have those discussions with yourself. We're going to continue more with a bit of that interview later on. We're also going to hear a little bit of music in just a second. And we're going to talk about how gay gifts. How you giving gifts? What you giving to your friends? What's a good gift? What's a bad gift? Have you ever gotten a bad gift? We're going to talk about that. You are listening to Queer State of Mind right here on Radio Free Brooklyn. Make sure to check us out online at www.radiofreebrooklyn.com. You can also find all of our shows, our webcasts, our blogs, everything for Queer State of Mind and all of the Queer Minded Radio Network on www.radioqueerminded.com. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Melody.
All right, you're back live on Queer State of Mind. We almost forgot to come back on the air because that song was good. We was just jamming here in the studio. That was Patty. Yeah, I don't know why. Mary was the last song. This is Miss Patty LaBelle.
No, there's a difference.
With This Christmas.
That's called Key.
Ooh. It's called...
The key has been found.
Hey, Rita, we're back to differ, honey.
Oh, can we... Before we get into the next segment... So there was one day that I was watching TV and, like, there were... Patty was on one show and Aretha was on another show. And I can't remember what shows, but Patty was looking good. You know, everything was set. She was on with James Wright, Chanel Wright. They was doing the cooking thing. And then Miss Aretha Franklin got on some show and I just...
She is from Detroit.
She needs a pie or something lift her spirits. I don't know.
I'll put it this way. I had this conversation with Justin yesterday. Patty is having the great fourth act.
Yeah.
She's having a great fourth act.
Okay.
Her first three acts were, you know, when Aretha became famous, Patty was always number two. Okay, fine. She's like, okay, you know what? Once Aretha calms down, I'm going to be all right. When Aretha calmed down a little bit, Dinah Ross showed up. Pat's like, okay, I'm going to be all right. You know what?
So it's Patty's time.
Yeah, I'm going to get this in the 70s.
Yeah.
70s came out, Donna Summer showed up. Oh, damn, okay.
See.
Everybody alone.
Oh, okay.
You know, she's all right, I'm getting the 80s. 80s came out,
Whitney Houston
came out.
Okay. Okay. So it's her Patty's
cousin.
Time.
Her cousin was yeah. right.
So it was always something. So now it's her fourth act, and I think that number one Aretha could give a damn.
Not right.
look at those fashions. Can't you tell?
Yes.
You know, great gowns. Oh, beautiful gowns. It's a shade, honey.
All right. Look, well, coming up in this second half, we're going to hear more from author and journalist Wayne Childrey about his book, Peeling Back the Layers, and find out some of the reaction from our community about his story. And have you been buying your gifts? I know I'm always the person that waits till the last minute, the absolute last minute. So we're going to talk about holiday gift giving for the gays coming up a little bit later. So let's hear a little bit more from LaWayne about his wonderful story right here on Queer State of Mind. Thanks for joining us.
I'm curious to know about that idea, kind of along the same lines of the therapy and going back, you know, to when you talk about going back with your aunt and figuring out from her perspective, what was that day like? What does that tell you kind of about this process that we all have to go through of connecting with some of the trauma in our life and dealing with it and kind of analyzing like what we know about it and kind of reconciling it for ourselves? What did that say to you? What did that moment say to you?
Oh, wow. You know, just hearing you make that comment gave me chills, because I think what really happens is that we bottle a lot of this stuff inside of us, and we never, ever talk about it. We never, ever deal with it. And because of that, it creates a lot of pressure within us. And eventually, you know, our bodies, you know, when it comes to pressure, can be just like a pipe. You know, if that pressure builds up long enough, it will find a way to eventually burst or erupt in some kind of way. And that's what happened with me. So, you know, just understanding the value of having someone to talk to, having someone to just help you to get through whatever situation. For me, talk therapy was wonderful because I was actually able to open up and understand why I felt what I was feeling and how I actually felt, you know, during that time. You know, when I was writing the book, talking about this one issue, and there are so many universal things in this book, but just this one issue, where we're talking about the fire, you know, after I talked with her and I sat down to write this story, and which is the initial story, it's called In the Beginning. And when I sat down to write that part about the fire, it was the first time ever that I actually think I felt what I was feeling that day. It was the first time that I'd ever cried. I don't remember crying as a kid. I know, you know, I must have cried, you know, from fear or whatever, but I don't remember that. But I remember writing this story and feeling just grief-stricken for the first time ever. And, you know, when I wrote this book, well, I'm 53 now, so when I wrote this book, I had to be, what, 49, 50 years old. Because it took me about 3 years to write it and actually get it out. So, you know, for me, it has taught me the value of therapy, which I've learned that even since then, the value of therapy. But this book reminded me of the value of therapy.
One of the big things that you see, you know, looking at the release for the book, it identifies you as a Black gay youth. It talks about your experiences as a Black gay youth from the Deep South. And that's kind of the way that the story is framed. How has that Black identity, that Blackness, that gayness, what are some of the ways that it has shaped, even, you know, to this day, the experiences that you have in reference to this book? And then I'm curious to know, what has the reaction been from other Black gay men to what you've seen, your presentations, and to what they've seen of the book?
Again, you give me chills, because this book is doing exactly what I hoped it would do. It's touching lives and letting people know that they are not alone. You know, as a Black gay man growing up in the South, you know, you feel like you have to hide your identity. Because for the longest, you know, I don't think I've ever been one of the people who necessarily was trying to hide the fact that I was gay. I always assumed that everybody knew. You know, if you don't have a girlfriend, if you don't get married by a certain age, if you don't have any kids, people generally will say, well, you know, he's gay. I'm not an effeminate man, so, you know, maybe for me, you know, it came as a surprise to some people. But when I really think about the way that this story has impacted so many Black gay men, and you know, we talked earlier about people coming up to me saying, thank you for telling my son's story, my daughter's story, my family. The first time that I got any reaction from this story was from a colleague who used to be a news reporter. And I let her read the first draft. And I had written maybe 5 or 6 chapters of the book. And she and I would talk every day. And after she read the draft, we didn't talk for like a month. And I'm like, oh my God, she can't handle the truth. Because we never had the conversation about me being gay. Like I said, I always just assumed people knew that I was gay. Not that I was flamboyant or that I felt I was flamboyant. It's just that I know people know how to add and subtract, you know. When we didn't talk for over a month, I called her up one day, and she didn't answer the phone. And within 2 minutes, she was calling me back. And as soon as I answered the phone, I could hear that she was in tears. And again, I was like, oh my gosh, she can't handle the truth. But what she said was, LaWayne, I just want to thank you for telling my cousin's story. She said he didn't die from HIV, although we know he had it. He didn't die from addiction, although we know he was addicted. She said he died from domestic violence. She said, but LaWayne, I know if he had only had someone like you to talk with, he would still be alive today. And when she told me that, I was like, wow. And this is a black female. I was like, wow, I know I have to continue on with this book. The first time I heard this story read aloud is when I won the Alabama Futures Contest, which was part of the 50-year celebration of the Alabama Community College System, which I'm a product of. They were celebrating their 50th year anniversary, and one of my advisors from the college that I attended in Alabama, Jefferson State Community College, knew most of my story. She knew about my struggles with HIV/AIDS and blah, blah, blah. She didn't know the whole story, but she knew that part of it. She also knew that I had gone on to live a pretty rewarding life, you know, as a broadcast journalist. But she called me up and she said, LaWayne, the Alabama Community College System having this contest. With it comes a $5,000 scholarship that will be presented to an Alabama high school student in your name if you win. And LaWayne, I really think people need to hear your story. And And so the criteria was you had to submit an essay or you could submit a video. I chose an essay. And what I did was subtracted the from my introduction of the book. And so I submitted this essay that starts out just like the introduction to my book. How does a troubled black gay youth from the Deep South grow up to become one of the most respected news journalists in the country? You know, some may say it takes a considerable amount of talent, hard work, and determination. But for me, it also included an immense struggle through a deep sea of adversities, including childhood sexual abuse, a crack cocaine addiction, and an HIV diagnosis. Now, I'm sitting in this honors convocation with maybe 300-400 people, predominantly white older people who were there to see their loved ones winning their accolades, you know, for the success that they'd had in school. And so I'm back there after all these years, and I'm listening to this guy introduce me by reading this essay that I submitted, and I'm literally like shaking in my seat because I'm like, how are these people going to take this? And after the guy finished, he called me up. The entire room erupted in this standing ovation with this thunderous applause. And I'm like, oh, my God, people get it. And that was, again, when after the ceremony ended, I had people coming up to me, black, white, young, old, male, female, thanking me for telling this story. And I'm like, wow. I know I'm onto something, and I know that I'm onto something because there are a lot of people hurting, and I want them to know that you don't have to continue to hurt. Life can get better. I think this book, for me, is a demonstration of what can happen if you truly believe in yourself and truly believe in your inner power and strength. And for me, that inner power and strength is God, you know. And even though I am a Christian, I don't force that down anybody. And I'm going to tell you, the interesting thing is that this book has gained the attention of a guy who has become a good friend of mine now. His name is Joel Eisenberg. He's a big Hollywood producer. I met him at a conference earlier this spring. He took one look at my book, read the jacket, and was like, wow. And the interesting thing is that Joel is not a religious person, but he looked at this story, wrote a fantastic review, called it the best nonfiction of 2014 and 2015 that he had read so far, and is interested in seeing this movie converted to a screenplay, which for me, you know, would be phenomenal. But what this book demonstrates is that regardless of who you are, where you come from, you know, there is always hope. You know, you can, whatever it is that you're going through, you can get through it.
All right, you were just listening to an interview from author and journalist LaWayne Childrey right here on Queer State of Mind. He was talking about how we go through a lot of different things in our lives, and you know, his book talks about all of his different experiences and how they shape them and how he's overcome them. And I'm curious, what do you guys think of, you know, we're in our 30s, 20s. You know,
late 20s.
Yes, God.
Infancy.
And yes, we're young, Zygote. Young queer ingenue.
I'll take it.
Yes. And so what do you think of that idea of just needing to have hope to get through? Because I know I've had those days where you're just like, this shit ain't going to work out. Like, it's not going to work out. It's just so much. Like, how do you get through that?
I believe anything is possible.
Through Christ.
Through Christ.
Definitely.
Who strengthens me.
Yes. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen.
So. We was being funny, but he was being serious. No. Never mind.
No. He's a very religious and spiritual person. I'm a spiritual person, too. Yeah. I don't necessarily believe in the doctrine of the Bible, per se, or the Quran, because I grew up in a bi-religious home. Bi-religious. That sounds so weird.
Religious.
So, you know, but I do believe in the spiritual nature. I believe that we're all connected. I believe that we have existence before and after this presence here on Earth. And I don't want to go too deep, but I do kind of believe in this idea that faith in not only ourselves, but in our future and our abilities and our talents and humanity is what keeps us going forward.
You know what we talked about earlier when you asked me about the
trauma.
Yeah.
That's how I get through the day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When I'm having a bad day, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, but I'm not in the Liberian war again.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
That's it for me. That I'm like, it. I'm not being shot at. Mm-hmm. I'm not seeing people stab. I don't see. That's pretty much it. Like, then I just changed it. My mind is like, all right, bitch, you're not in the war.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's about being grateful because someone else is always worse off.
Yeah. And I think that we, you know, you're talking about the first world problems. Like, we have a lot of things here in New York City. Like, we're the quintessential, like, capital of first world problems. Like, the subway be late, you be mad. Your taxi driver pissed you off, you be mad. Your delivery is late, you be mad. Like, you just be mad about everything.
They don't deliver, they don't take cards.
They don't take cards. You be in a bar and they got a limit.
Yeah.
But, like, we find excuses to just be mad. But, like, we live in this city that literally opportunity is just falling at your feet.
Absolutely.
Like, there are a lot of people struggling, and there are a lot of people that don't have opportunities. And I can't say that it's rosy for everyone. But even when you're kind of – I feel like we're in a place where when you're at you're really struggling – it's still kind of a lot better than what you would experience in war-torn Liberia, for example, or the refugees that are currently mm-hmm. spreading out from the Middle East across the globe, trying to just find safety and security and peace. You know, I feel like our experience is better. So I think that, you know, that hope message, we're talking about Christmas and holidays and, you know, that message of hope, I think is really important. Like, we do have, despite everything that's going on with Donald Trump and everything, like, there's hope.
There's hope, definitely.
Absolutely. So let's get on to the gift given for the gays, because I really don't know. Here's why I wanted to do this segment, because honestly, I have no idea what to buy for people like my boyfriend and stuff. I have some ideas. I have some, because he's probably going to listen to this show and he's going to be like, so you don't know what you're going to get me. So I already have some gifts ready for you if you listen in. But I think it's always interesting because, you know, they do a lot of marketing around the holidays for couples and get your wifey this, get your husband this. But are they really targeting us? And, like, what are some good gifts for your gay friends or your partner? You know, what are some good gifts? What do you think?
A gift card for PrEP?
Can you?
Girl!
I wasn't expecting that.
Where's that? Like, bitch, ring that motherfucking bell. Right now. Right the fuck now. I am completely done. And
that.
Over.
She did that.
She just really did. Fucking did that.
This bitch is not like, funny. But when she is funny, that was funny.
Oh,
you know what? I was. Well, since she's opened that door, honey. After that, would be a good gift, honey.
Right. You know, you got that hoe friend. You get that industrial strength bottle of lube.
It's the gift
you
that keeps on
one.
Giving That's or true. Prevents from giving. I don't know.
I feel like we should continue on to regular gifts and steer away from this conversation.
Well, no, actually.
A good friend would give that, right?
Yeah, no.
A good friend, right?
A good friend will give you that gift, but not that gift.
A good friend that knows
you. Not the gift, but that gift.
That gift.
Not the gift you can't get rid of.
Right. Yes, child. The devil is busy, honey.
I literally can't even, you
be
guys.
Gone, so Beelzebub, honey.
I literally can't
even. So what are these gifts? Do they come with camel cash?
Okay, so I'm looking at a list of gift guides, Out Exclusive Gift Guide on out.com. And it's got like, okay, so it has things like sunglasses, wireless speakers, Okay. Shawl, collar, cardigans. Okay, I like that.
I do have a cardigan.
Let's click that. You know, yeah. Let's see what's going on with that. From Club Monaco. Ooh, that's cute. That's cute, guys. Okay, let's look.
Okay, now here's the deal. And now, yeah. Depending on the race of your...
cute.
Depending on the race of your boyfriend, mm-hmm. You can't just get them, like, regular shaving equipment.
No. Okay, so if you have a brown or black boyfriend, you should probably go with the Bevel.
Yeah.
The Bevel for us. Dollar Shave Club isn't
yeah,
for us.
Or get, right, you know, you have to you have to be mindful.
I did get a really great gift for Christmas this year.
Ooh, do tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, this is when I realized I was an old man.
Oh, yeah, I read this on Facebook. You know, I realized I was because I did love this too.
My late 20s, of course.
Mm-hmm. Still a young queer
years
ingenue.
Ago,
ingenue.
But my I got a gift. I saw this big box from Amazon. I was like, "What the mm-hmm. fuck is this?" So Sadie, I was like, "Okay, open this." So I opened the box from Amazon, and I shit you not, I almost had a tear because my friend Micah,
it wasn't me,
sent me a crock pot.
Bitch.
Okay,
bitch.
Open.
I went in.
Girl
no,
needs to have
no,
a crock pot.
Lied. All the shade behind that. All the shade.
Okay, so there's a story.
Wait. Okay, I'm going to say this because
yeah,
I want to get the story correctly.
Yeah, because so, we have a minute and then y'all got to tell me whatever it is y'all
okay.
was trying to tell
okay,
me.
Make this right. Justin cooks in crock pot a lot. I don't cook in crock pot. Mm. Now, I'm happy to get a crock pot because I can't wait to do crock pot recipes. The only problem is I wonder if she can make the same things in the crock pot in the stove, but I don't think she can. That's the shade. That's all it is.
Oh, see. So
she's
she
a crock pot
you,
cooker.
She's trying to put you out on blast.
But she don't know how to cook it on a real stove.
Ooh, but I can. See. I can.
I haven't okay. tasted it.
Oh, yeah, you don't come over. I don't invite you over to the Bronx just for that shit.
You should.
Uh-huh. Right.
No, I don't want to share my goodies.
Oh, what?
Okay. That's a whole.
That's not what we heard. Anyway,
trash.
So Justin and Teron, before we go, we got about 2 minutes and a half left. Justin and Teron have been on me about this thing that they want to tell me, but they've been like a secret and they won't tell me. And it's like we're gonna have to wait until we get on the air to tell me what the secret is. So now we on air live to everyone in New York City and the world. What the fuck is going on?
So I put up a birthday picture. It was my mom's birthday on Tuesday. And mm-hmm. I put up a picture of my mom and I. I'm like, you know, happy
I saw that picture. It was way cute.
Yeah, because she's
yeah,
you know,
cute.
She's fabulous.
She's gorgeous.
And, you know, she birthed this piece of fabulousness. So,
right.
You know,
I think that's actually what your post was.
It really was yeah. my post. She's just as humble as I am. Uh-huh. So. And I'll let Teron take it from here.
And so I was looking at the picture, studying facial features, right? And I noticed the distinct... nose.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, that's nobody but the Johnsons. The Johnsons who? The Johnsons from Cincinnati, Ohio, where we both are from. Come to find out, his mother is my brother's aunt. That
what?
Means Justin and I are cousins.
Shut the fuck up.
So that's the big secret.
You're fucking kidding
I'm
me.
I'm glad they didn't touch each other, honey.
Oh,
I would have
that's what he was waiting for. I was
that,
like,
oh, God, tell me
that
you touch each other.
That was the takeaway.
No, everybody, that
was
not
that was what Sadie was hoping for.
Girl, I'm
Sadie
shade
was
like
for
that.
Shade. Sadie
I'm
was for shade.
Shade. I do live for shade, honey. I live for shade,
wow.
And I live for the applause, honey.
I live for the applause.
That it took us this long to figure
yeah.
it out.
So that is really funny. And like, a lot of people have that experience. I don't know. For me, like, it's always like, yeah, many people, like, there are a lot of people in my family that I haven't encountered. And so that's really interesting when you encounter
yeah.
people. So we brought them so happy. We brought you together.
Exactly.
And now you have rekindled your family.
This one was surprise, Ori. Oh, my
I
God.
I was. You should have saw my face. Oh, my goodness. That is crazy. So,
we are not cousins.
Unfortunately, we are so not. But
and
so
I'm white.
We're cousins in love in Christ. We cousins
right.
in Christ.
Oh, thank
are,
you.
Brothers in Christ. Are we sisters yes, in the name of love?
Sisters,
like Patti LaBelle and Dionne Warwick and Gladys Knight?
Yeah, maybe. Ooh. But not that shady. Yeah. All right, y'all. So we're about out of time. We got about 20 seconds left. I want to thank everybody for coming on tonight. We are going to be back next week with a recorded show, and then we're going to be back live in 2 weeks. So make sure to join us. You are listening to Queer State of Mind, and I'm so glad that you're joining us. Make sure to check us out on radio, queerminded.com. I'm Ori Givens. Have a great afternoon. And